We start hour number three by running down a friend of the program. He is also a writer at large for NBC Sports. He is Tim Layden. Tim, it's great to have you back. And before we get into what I consider this great piece that you've done on NBCSports.com right now, how are you and everybody around you, Tim, doing during this pandemic?
We're good, Jim. You know, we live in New England in a fairly rural area, so we've been lucky. We can get out. We can ride bikes, go for a run. Got some crappy free weights that have been lying around for years, so it's been okay. We're luckier than a lot of people, and nobody real close to me has gotten real sick, so I'm thankful for that.
Very good. Tim Layden is joining us. Now, Tim, you've been covering sports for decades. Normally, you and I, if we're talking in May, we're talking about the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. What's it been like to not have sports to cover for the past 2 months?
It's been, I mean, probably, Jim, the same way it is for a lot of people. You know, I mean, it's like there's nothing to do at night for watching, but for me, it's also, you know, during the day when you're looking for things to write about, you got to go way outside the box and think about things that happened a long time ago or things that may happen a long time in the future or how this situation with the virus is impacting sports. And, you know, thinking outside the box is always good, but it does get old. And, you know, I think like everybody else, I'm ready to have something that's current to write about instead of things that are hypothetical or old. And, you know, but you got to be patient at the same time.
We're talking to Tim Layden. Now, the piece on NBCSports.com has the headline, "Sports are coming back, but they'll never be the same." And you open it by writing about the image of Michael Jordan walking off the court after the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals. You have fans leaning out trying to get high five. What was it about that image that caught your attention?
It was just, you know, Jim, I don't think any of us would have thought any of it in any other time, but it just, I knew I was working on this story, and like everybody else, I was watching the Jordan doc every Sunday night, you know, wire to wire. And I saw that image, and he was coming off, and it was all these people, old people, young people, men, women, holding their hands out into the tunnel. And we've all seen like a million shots of athletes walking either down a tunnel to a field or back through a tunnel to the locker room. And it's a really common sports image, but I just thought, you know, we're not going to be able to do that anymore, not in the near future. And you know, the question I tried to answer is, are we ever going to be able to do that again? And how are athletes going to feel about it? And it just looked to me like something that looked like a time capsule. I just thought, nobody can see around the corner of the situation we're in. You know, we can guess and we can interview people, but my gut feeling was that you're just not going to see an athlete reach up and high-five a spectator walking off the court ever again. I just... Athletes are germophobes. They take care of themselves. And I just think we've all learned that that's one area of risk that can be cut out. Mm. And that's what it looked like to me.
We're talking to Tim Layden. Tim, you also made the point that we need sports, but at the same time, it's also important to ask the question, if we do need sports, is it because it's a useful exercise? Or lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I meant was, you know, I mean, I make my living in sports. You make your living in sports. We not only want it, we kind of need it.
Right.
And really need it. But you go one step away from us to someone who's just a fan, I'm sure they feel like they need it too. And it's a big part of all our lives. But I do think, like, every day as I've been working on things and trying to figure out when sports are going to come back and other things to write about, I found myself thinking, you got to be careful here because a lot of people have died. And a lot of people have had to change their lives. And it's been this incredible disruption to everybody in America and a lot of places in the world. And I just think it's useful to sit back and say, man, I really would like to see the rest of the NBA season. I really want to know if the Lakers can win this thing. But at the same time, I just think that for anybody who's a really avid sports fan, there's a lot of value in stepping back every once in a while and saying, you know, how important is it really? You know, like just, and I'm not saying it isn't a big deal because it is, but at the same time, I just think it's good to, no pun intended, take our temperature once in a while and figure out, you really want to see this stuff, but what's important right now? And both things can be true. Sports can be important and other things can be more important. And that's, I'm just trying to keep my own finger on that pulse all the time.
It's really interesting, isn't it, Tim? Like, for instance, after this happened, sports were not important. And then it seems like they were more important, but you're right. We need to keep our finger on the pulse and decide just how important. You were part of the coverage of sports before and after September 11th. In what ways does this feel similar, and in what ways is it different in your mind?
To me, there's two big ways, Jim. The first is, terrorism won't ever end. It's always going to be a part of the world. It's been that way for centuries. But 9/11 as an event ended. You know what I mean? It was over, and then we could go on. You could take your anger and your grief and all those things and channel them into the world, knowing that we were trying to do things to prevent this from happening again, but that singular event ended. It hasn't ended. It's changed, and it's interpreted different ways, and maybe we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, but we're worried about what might happen next winter, so it's just kind of doggedly pursuing us. And so that's a huge difference. The other difference is, as we try to, and this is more, you know, more of a third rail thing, as we're trying to figure out how to go forward with this, we're not all on the same page. In 9/11, we were all on the same page. We all knew, let's get together, let's wave the flag, let's realize that our country's been attacked, and we got to get together on this. And whatever that takes, that's what we'll do. With this one, we're not all in agreement with what it takes. And, you know, Americans as a country do really well when we're all on the same page. But when we're not on the same page, it's harder to move forward and figure out what the best steps are. And when we're fighting with each other, sometimes that's a really good thing because it gets us to creative places, and sometimes it's tricky. I think those are the two biggest differences.
Tim Layden joining us, a writer-at-large for NBC Sports. So, Tim, Major League Baseball, of course, has developed a 67-page document outlining health and safety procedures that are required or at least recommended to restart the season. When you consider some of the items on that list, like no high fives, they're recommending no showering at the facilities, guys not sitting next to each other in the dugout, how different will the game look? And has that also changed forever?
I think some of it is going to stick. I mean, Jim, honestly, one of the things that this isn't one of the most important things there. I think people can get. I think major league athletes, if they have to go back to the hotel to shower, they're going to get used to that because they did that when they were kids. You know, I mean, we all revert to how sports were when we were kids. That one doesn't seem to be hard. High fives and handshakes, I think. Half the athletes in the world would just as soon get rid of that anyway because, like I said earlier, they kind of know that that's not the greatest thing in the world to do unless it's with people you know and you go wash your hands afterwards. I immediately thought I can't picture a baseball game without people spitting. You know, that one really
right.
That one hit me right between the eyes, and it's a small thing, but, you know, it jumped out at me. Like, I don't know how you legislate that out of baseball or almost any sport, but I do think that a lot of those changes that are for now, you know, fans are going to come back. We don't know when or how, but fans will come back. But things like handshaking and high fives and the stuff, you know, with fans, you know, like moving up to the side of the dugout and posing for a selfie with a family, or at football training camp posing for selfies with 100 fans. Maybe it's going to be a personal choice for athletes, but I just see athletes saying, now I know that there's more risk in this than I realized, and I'm just going to easily cut that out of my routine. And I think in that way, that's going to look different, and I think we'll get used to it.
So, Tim, does that mean that the autograph is also done?
Maybe. There might be ways around that, you know, like one doctor suggested, you know, make sure the athlete keeps his own Sharpie, you know, don't take a pen or a Sharpie from somebody else. But then you're also in that situation where the athlete is like, you know, 6 inches from hundreds of fans and they're breathing on each other. And again, I think we'll back off and go more towards normal, but I don't think we'll go all the way back. That's the thing that's uncertain, but the experts I talked to said that some of them have worked with major league teams and organizations, and they've pretty well decided that kind of heavy, real close personal interaction between fans and athletes or fans and coaches is just something that's just going to move back. And whether it goes away entirely, we just don't know yet. It really could be up to individual athletes, but they're going to realize better now than before that we can make each other sick. And if it's a cold, we can deal with that. If it's a virus that people die from, maybe not. Most things are in the middle. But I just see athletes deciding to mitigate their own risk a little bit.
We're talking to Tim Layden, so it makes you wonder, right, Tim, like it's not about you or about me or about our business, but when you look at what you've done over the course of your career, and again, not looking to make it about yourself, but some of the best stories of your career have been very personal in the sense that you had close physical proximity. You had lunch with Usain Bolt in Jamaica. You had dinner with Pat Tillman in Tempe. You visited with Lindsey Vonn. Like, what is it about those conversations that makes them so special, and will you be able to do that going forward?
You know, Jim, you've been interviewing athletes your whole life, too. You know that there's a difference between when, whether it's Chris Long or somebody like that calls into your show. That's a great interview. But, man, there's nothing like sitting next to somebody and having those conversations and getting in a car and going to a workout. And, back when this first started, there was this big thing about media being whiny crybabies that they don't get to go in locker rooms anymore. I mean, I think that's gone for good now, but those little interactions where, I wrote in that column that I ate a meal with Michael Phelps and with Pat Tillman 18 years apart, basically on the same footprint in Tempe. It's a different place because Tempe's been totally bulldozed and rebuilt in the interim, but, both of those interviews were just incredible because I was sitting like 18 inches from somebody who was really interesting. And you can't get that on a phone, and you can't get that on Skype, and it's just not the same. And I hope it doesn't go away. I hope there's a way to make those things continue. Not because I want people to love the media, but those are the kind of stories that people really appreciate. And we're people that want to be around other people, and I just hope we can preserve some of that. But I do think there's going to be a period here for weeks, months, or years where everybody's a little sketchy about that, and they probably should be, but I hope some of that comes back.
You're so right. Tim Layden joining us. Tim, before you go, you mentioned Pat Tillman. As you think back to Pat and you think about the time you spent with Pat, what do you remember most about that time you spent with Pat?
Just that Pat lived life with no filter. Pat, I asked Pat questions that he didn't have to answer, and he answered them straight up. And I asked him questions about his physical abilities, and he didn't exaggerate. He was self-deprecating where he needed to be, and he was confident where he needed to be. And he was just a no BS human being, Jim. And there's like a really small number of those in the world. And when you have a chance to be around somebody like that, it never leaves you. And that's why every time I see Pat's name somewhere, it just makes me feel fortunate to have known the guy and sad that he's not with us anymore.
Tim, he was so larger than life. I feel so naive, but I've made this statement a number of times. I always assumed he would come back. I always assumed that he would return home. I didn't think that he would necessarily tell us about the experience entirely or the thought process, but I always assumed he would come back, and it was just such a naive thing to think. Do you remember what you thought or what crossed your mind when you heard he had been killed?
I was just kind of the same thing because I wondered why he went as far as he did to leave the world of the NFL and the money he was. I mean, I kind of knew why, but I wondered, there's so many ways that Pat could have changed the world without putting on that uniform and picking up that gun and going into what he went into in Afghanistan. But that was the way he worked. And just like you, I thought, well, he's going to come back and he's going to do amazing things. And he's just got to get through this. He was Superman. And Superman, Superman doesn't die like that. And, and I've come to know people that were with Pat when all that happened. And, it's just such a huge shame the way it all went down. And it would have been horrible no matter how it happened. But for a guy that I didn't know that well, but you didn't have to catch what he was about, I just missed that the guy's not with us.
I've been trying to make a point similar to that, Tim, for so many years, and I think that you made it better than I ever have. Before I let you go, let me come full circle. There's no way you can come on in May and you and I can't talk horse racing at all. So, Tim, what do you make of the revamped Triple Crown schedule this year? Because within the sport, there's already been very energetic reaction to that. What are your thoughts?
I mean, there's no Triple Crown this year. It's just three races that have those same names. And I think the Derby will remain a big deal this year, although it's going to have an asterisk because it's not in May. The Belmont isn't the Belmont. It's just a... It's like the Peter Pan or some other Belmont race, and it's fine. And I wish they had gone to a mile and a quarter. I don't know why they had to pull all the way back to a mile and an eighth. And the Preakness is just a race that follows the Derby. And I hope they're all successful. Maybe they can have some fans, but it's you call it a Triple Crown, but you know don't call it the Triple Crown because it's not. And that's okay. This year's different. Everybody's making compromises in their life that are much bigger than rearranging some horse races, but it's not the Triple Crown. It's something different, and maybe next year we get back to something more normal.
I'm trying to let you go, Tim, but if it's not the Triple Crown, and I agree with you, it's not the Triple Crown, but if it's not the Triple Crown, then would a World Series in an 82-game season not be a World Series? Would an NBA championship in a shortened season not be an NBA championship? I guess we should have these things before we consider these things, but how should we see these things?
Well, I mean, I think we've had shortened season in you know, strike shortened and other labor things that have shortened, and we still have a World Series, like you said. We still declare an NBA champion. But I think the Triple Crown is different because what makes it the Triple Crown is partly the season of the year because these are young horses still learning to run. So it's a huge ask of them to go a mile and a quarter in Kentucky in front of 160,000 fans, come back in 2 weeks and go a mile and 3/16 in Baltimore, 120,000 fans, and then go to Belmont and go a mile and a half 3 weeks later. It's the spacing and the timing of those three races that make it special. And when you mess with that, it's just, if you change the distances or something like that, then maybe you give them some leeway. But, you know, circumstances have ruled what they could do here, and it's out of their hands. But once you change that timing, Jim, and it doesn't build to the Belmont to a mile and a half in June, it's something completely different. It's not a shortened NBA season. It's like no NBA season at all. It's not the same, and I just don't think you can make that comparison. It's just not. It's too different. It's too far beyond what the norm to call it a Triple Crown.
Agreed. If it's safe and it's right and you run the races, that's fine. Bring it back, but don't call it a Triple Crown because that's not what that is. He is the excellent, excellent writer at large for NBC Sports. Very good friend of the program. He is Tim Layden. Tim, I appreciate you so much. Stay safe. Really good to have you on the show, Tim. I hope we can do it again really soon.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
Tim Layden. And if it sounds like I have immense respect for him, it's because I do. Essentially, all of us in the business do.